So this next speaker is from Synopsys, Louis Silva, who will be talking about understanding API compatibility between compilers, targeting RISC-V. Thank you.
So hello everyone. As mentioned, I'm Luis Silva. I'm from Synopsys. I'm a junior compiler engineer working on GCC, and I'm here to present a talk on understanding API compatibility between compilers targeting RISC-V. So for our agenda today, we will talk about the why we started this project, about the tool. Then we talk about the tool implementation details and how it works, and then finally the conclusion. Let's start with the problem statement. So our goal is to be able to link RISC-V object files from different compilers and be able and make sure that the combination would work. And our focusing is identify potential discrepancies in the APIs used by different compilers or same compiler with their different options. We want to make sure that we can identify deviations from the standard API, which is defined by RISC-V documentation. So first of all, what's an application binary interface? So according to the Wikipedia, ABI specifies an interface between the binary program modules, for example, object files, or a program that depends on library. It also defines low-level details, for example, properties of fundamental types, calling convention, and main usage of registers. Also defines high-level details. And it is managed by compilers, operating systems, and develops of libraries. But our focus is the compatibility between compilers for a specific target. So within ABI, it defines register usage. So what is it? So it specifies a purpose for each register. Here we have a list from the RISC-V ABI documentation that specifies each register and their purpose. You can see that on the right we have something called caller and callee. So basically a caller means that this register needs to be saved before a function call, and the callee means that after the function call, in the callee function, the register that will be needs to be stored in the stack. It also defines, here we have an example of the function arguments, which is defined by the ABI, which means that these are the registers from X10 to X17 expected to pass the arguments between functions. Data layout. This is a really important thing about the ABI that defines. It specifies the sizes and alignments of fundamental C and C++ types. It specifies how structs, unions, and classes are laid out in memory, as well as for the bit fields or in the struct. And here this is again a table from the RISC-V document that tells us for each the 32 and 64-bit architecture the size and alignment for each data type. Now there's a really important thing called endianness. There's two main ones, little endian and big endian, and then there's also mixed. But real quick, big endian means that a value is stored in memory starting by the least significant bit, while big endian, it starts for the most significant bit. This is important because if we have two object files, one little endian and another in one big endian, when we are combining each other, they won't work because they all try to fetch different things from memory. Calling convention. So between function calls, we need to understand which registers or memory locations are used to pass the arguments. How return value is passed, either on a register or on the stack. Who's responsible for saving these registers and the stack frame structure. So here I have a really quick example. On the left we have a simple C code that does a function call with 9 arguments, and on the right we have the corresponding assembly code. So we can see the line 7 on C test and line 2 to 5th on the assembly. We have the prologue of the function, which will allocate space on the stack and save the register, the return address register and the S0 register to the stack because it will be used during the function. And for the yellow part, which is between the line 6 to 16, is the actual preparation to the function call. You can see that each value it's being stored for the registers, except for the argument 9, which is the value 9, it's actually being stored on the stack, in the stack. So the rest of them will be stored in registers from the A7 to A0. It starts from the end to first. So line 17 is preparing for the return, which we set the return as 1, 2, 3. So we will save the value to A5 and later on specify to A0 register, which is what we expected from the ABI. And finally, there's the epilogue where it's restoring the registers that it saved earlier and then exiting to the caller function. Libraries. Libraries are really important for the ABI because if we have a C++ program, they can interact with each other as long as they are ABI compatible. It means, for example, the header file. If we are calling a function, we are in C and calling a function in C++, the arguments need to be the same, data types, returns, etc. Also for macros, they can be used together as long as they are compatible. It ensures functions from libraries that can be called correctly, either linked statically or dynamically. Specifies all functions are named and location in memory, and also the version compatibility between libraries. Exception handling for C++ is also defined by the ABI. And systems, it allows programs to run on different OS or hardware versions as long without recompilation, as long as they follow the same ABI. Now, there are a number of projects with similar goal, but slightly different. First one is ABI dump, which is part from the ABI compliance checker. This one has a goal of extracting ABI properties from libraries. And how does he do it? He analyzes the dwarf debug information from the libraries. Here I have a really quick example how it works. It will extract all the data using the JSON format. ABI compliance checker ensures backwards binary source level compatibility of C and C++ libraries. How does it do it? It uses ABI dump from the previous slide to analyze the dwarf information. LibAbigail, the goal is to detect interface incompatibilities in ELF shared libraries. How does it do it? It analyzes the ELF shared libraries and their associated debug information, again with dwarf, to build internal representations of expert functions and variables. It identifies changes in function and variables and their data types. For example, the return type changes. ABI Cafe. So this one, the goal is to identify again if two compilers or languages they agree on the same the ABIs. And how do they do it? They do it by brute forcing, basically. They generate random test cases focusing on detecting ABI incompatibilities. And if they agree, great. If they don't agree, then even better because we just learned something. It's essentially an ABI fuzzer, although it's more like an API fuzzer that detects ABI incompatibilities. Now let's jump into the framework and let's start with the end, basically the summary report, which is the output from our framework. This example is from GCC, extracting from GCC 32-bit RISC file. So we selected a number of test cases to display here. So the first one will be the most important one, is extracting the data type sizes. As you can see here, for shard, signed shard and unsigned shard, we have a value of 1 byte of size. And for an int long pointer and a float, we have the size of 4. This is everything corrected to what we expected. Second one is the stack direction, which is really important. We need to understand if the stack is going upwards or downwards in memory. And according to the ABI, it's downwards, which is exactly what the framework extracted. Next one is the alignment of the stack. Again, the stack is aligned to 16 bytes, which is exactly what we expected. Now, this test case is a little more tricky. So here we want to understand which registers or the stack is used when passing arguments from one function to another. So here we can see in the summary that the shard, short, int, long, and float, they all use the same registers from 1 to 8 arguments. And then when we reach 9 arguments, it starts putting the values to the stack. Now for a long, long, and double is a little different. Now remember that we are in a 32-bit architecture, and we saw that a long, long, and a double, they are 8 bytes in size. That means that we cannot fit the whole volume into one register. We need to, the compiler will split the volume in two, and low and high. And this is exactly what our framework is telling us. It, for the long log and double, we can only store four values in the registers because each one will be split in the low and high. And then when it reaches the stack, it continues to do the same thing. It's low and high. Next one is more tricky. We will talk about it more later, but really rough. This one, for the structs, it doesn't go for the number of members, but the size of a struct. So we want to understand what's the boundary of the size of a struct until it starts going into pass by reference on the stack. And here we can see that a size of a struct less or equals to 8 bytes, it's passed on registers. When it's greater than 8, it is passed by reference on the stack. Short, int, and long float, they use all the same registers, A0, A1, and long double use the same registers, in this case for low and high for each one. Now we will also test to see if an empty struct when passing through a function is ignored by the C compiler, and this is exactly what the framework is telling us. Now, in the endless test, this is what I described before, we need to understand if our system is little endian, big endian, or a mix. Now, for what I tested, this is for a little endian, this is exactly what the test determined. So it wrote a value and then it read from memory, and from that he can understand which one it is. Caller saved and callee saved. This is what I also discussed earlier. We need to understand if the compiler is going according to the ABI, which registers are being caller saved and which registers are being callee saved. The framework was able to identify which ones are what and produce a report on it. Return registers, this is when we are going from the callee function to the caller function, so as a return. We need to understand where the value will be located when doing the proper function call. So this is exactly what the framework is telling us. So for a short, int, long, and float, the register uses A0. For long, and double, the value is split. Now, design choices. We decided not to use dwarf. So we wanted to eliminate all the layers between the compiler and what we can extract from it. So, and also from different compilers might encode information in a different way. Another thing is that we don't want to restrict this framework to compilers that only use, that produce dwarf. So we want to make sure that we can use this framework in any compiler, even if it has dwarf or it doesn't use dwarf. We assume the availability of a compiler. When I say compiler, I'm mentioning the whole toolchain as a compiler, assembler, linker, and a simulator to run the tests. The framework is developed in Python, and it basically generates C test cases and runs them on the simulator and then extract the compiler behavior. It produces a summary report that we already discussed. It's easy to extend. So the base framework, it generates C tests, it runs them and extracts the output. It's easy to add new analyzers, and it's possible to share information between those analyzers. We have support for a feedback loop, and what does that mean? It means that for some tests, they are dynamically generated based on the results from the previous run. It all inside the same test case. For example, finding the boundary where structs are passed between function calls. We will talk a little bit more later for us explain the example. Now let's go into implementation details. So how do we extract all this information? We use something called architecture dump information. It will extract the information from the current execution, meaning that we will be able to extract the contents of all the registers and then the stack and then also some header information, for example, the size of a pointer, the register banks, etc. This one is used mostly for the calling convention. We need to understand the location of the known special values when you're making the function call, and it helps the analyzer reduce how the compiler passes the arguments, also for the caller and callee saved registers test case. Now let's go deep into one of the examples, the struct argument passing test case. So As I discussed earlier, we need to understand how structs are passed between function calls. We need to determine how non-empty and empty structs are passed, determine which registers are used, and identify under which conditions the struct is passed by reference. So according to the ABI, aggregates larger than 2 times x length, meaning that the size of a register, are passed by reference, and the replacement in the argument list with the address. Okay, this is great. This is what we expect to happen, but we need to understand if the compiler is behaving exactly like this. So we need to identify the maximum size at which the struct is passed by reference. And so what we do, it will start by generating multiple tests, incrementing the size of the struct by 1 byte. We will use shards as a first starter until the boundary is reached. So first things first, we create a struct, automatically generate a struct with one shard, and we add a value to it, and then we do a function call. And then we will have the dump of it. So here we have a register bank 0, and below will be all the register values that were in it. On the left in green, we have the specified, the corresponding register to it to help us analyze. So we can see that the value that we assign to the struct is actually in the register A0. So this is good. This is starting to look good, although this is not, we haven't already reached the limit. So we add another char. And so with 2 shards, we do exactly the same thing. We look into the dump, and we try to identify where those values are. And we can, and we can see that the value or the values are actually in the same registers, one to another, which is great. It's still being passed in registers, but we still haven't found our answer yet. So we continue to do this until we reach a point where, in this case, with 9 arguments, we'll see something different in the same register. So if you look into the A0, there's something different there. And if you look into the stack, it's actually the stack value there. And if you look into the stack values itself, you will see that all the argument values are there. So this is great. What does it mean? It means that we have reached the boundary at 8 bytes equals to 2 registers in size. Okay, great information. So far, so good. But we need to do this for all data types. It can be a little time consuming, so this is where the feedback loop kicks in. So we already have the information that the size of a struct greater than 8 bytes are expected to be passed by reference from the previous slide. So what we do is, for the 32-bit architecture, an int is 4 bytes. So a struct with 2 ints are already equals to 8 bytes, so it's expected to be passed by registers. If we add a char, it will be expected that it will be passed by reference. So this is exactly what we do. Instead of going from 1 int, 2 ints, etc., we start already with 2 ints, and we test it. And if it doesn't reach the stack, great. We will add a char, and it is expected to reach the stack. Now, there might be moments that doesn't happen, so we have a fall through that if the expected boundary is not reached, we increase the size by 1 and we repeat again. We have 3 ints and then we have a char and so on. So for this test case, we have the summary report, which we already discussed. So we have the limit of 8 is passed by registers. When it's greater than 8, there's a typo there, sorry. When it's greater than 8, it's passed on the stack. Now, what happens when we enable hardware floating point? We have some different information. Here you can see that the boundary, we have some information about the boundary being a limit of 16. And why does this happen? Is this a bug? What is going on? Exactly, right here. So we have the size, if less or equals to 16, specified in registers. If it's greater than 16, specified by reference on the stack. But it's only for double. And why is that? So according to the RISC-V ABI, a struct containing 2 floating-point reals is passed in 2 floating-point registers if neither real is more than ABIF length bits, while at least 2 registers, floating-point registers are available. What does this mean? It means that independent of the size of the struct, if we have two floats, two doubles, float double or double float, which the first one will be 8 bytes, the rest of them will be 16. Doesn't matter the size, it matters the number of elements. So for this one, we had to create a special test case for RISC-V that will determine this behavior. So they all will have the same behavior if we increase the number of elements in the struct, results in the struct being passed by reference. This is exactly what the new summary, special summary, tell us. So a member less or equal to 2, it passes in registers. If when there's more than 2 members, it's passed by reference on the stack. And then below we have the list of the conjunctions and members. So a float, float, double, double, a float, double, and a double float. Now for an empty struct, how do we do this? How do we make sure that an empty struct is being ignored by the C compiler? So we make use of a sentinel value, which is a marker that indicates the end of a data structure. So here we have an example test case. We have a sentinel value, which is coffee. Everyone loves it. And then we have an empty struct. So for each argument, possible argument, that we already know how many arguments we can test. So this is also information from previous tests. So we will test for the all possible 8 arguments. So the first one we will test for the empty struct, and then the sentinel. Second one, sentinel, empty struct, and so on. So if you look into the place an empty struct between the sentinel values for each possible argument position. All registers should contain, exactly. So each register, argument register, should contain the keyword coffee. That will tell us that indeed it's ignored by the C compiler. So if you look into the fourth argument position, so we have three sentinels, empty struct and a sentinel. If you look into the dump for the register A0 to A3, we have 4 keywords, meaning that indeed we are sure that in this case the empty struct is ignored by the C compiler. So we test this for all available positions. So this is a quick summary between the software floating point and the hardware floating point. We already discussed it. The hardware floating point, it's more dense, it has more information, but it's more complete, gives everything that we want to know. Now there are some situations where the ABI extractor cannot be sure of what it's extracting. So for example, here we have a simple GCC extracted information, everything's great, what we already discussed. But when we put Clang, we have some differences. So if you look into line 5 and 9, Clang, there is a warning there. So multiple value occurrences detected in T0 and stack, being T0 one of the temporary registers. Why does this happen? So the framework detected the same value, the same special value in 2 different places and cannot be sure which one is actually being used for the argument, the passing argument to a function. So it will tell us. Now, if we look deeply into this, which creates a simple C test that sends 9 values to a dump function, doesn't matter the name, and we look into the assembly, we can see that actually what is going on is the compiler is sending the value to T0 and later on will be used to store in stack. Okay. Now this also happens in GCC, but GCC uses a different argument, a different register. It uses the A5 register, which is one of the arguments one. So basically does the same thing, but it will start in the stack earlier and then we'll rewrite the register. So extendability, portability of the framework. Oops. So we don't want this to be exclusive for GCC or Clang or whatever, and the same for the simulator. So we wanted to make sure that we could easily add new compilers, simulators to it, so we went ahead with the idea of having bash wrappers. Each bash wrapper will tell the framework how to execute the proper proper compiler. We can use the same compiler with different ABI options, and everything of that will be placed in the wrapper. Same thing for the simulator. In this case, we are using QEMU to execute the tests. And on the right, we have a tree of the folders and how it looks currently. So we have inside scripts in wrapper, we have the compiler, and then each wrapper, which will be the, for example, the Clang RISC-V 32 and GCC RISC-V 32, each one will have for the assembler, the compiler, and the linker wrapper, same thing for the simulator. We can easily add new compilers to it. Now, portability, the same thing. We don't want to be focusing only in RISC-V. We want later on to add new architecture, x86, etc. So to do that, we had to make sure that we, for example, this is one of the reasons we didn't use Dwarf. But to add that is we have a class in Python that specifies the register banks, just specifies the names of it so that when generating the report, we'll give you the correct names for the registers, all pretty. And we have one assembly file specific, which is also part of the architecture dump information. This assembly file, it will be responsible for saving the registers to the memory and then later on print them to as a dump. It also has functions to reset the register to known value so that we don't have trash on it. Now, future extensions. These are the list of potential extensions we are working on. So currently, we are working on supporting 64-bit, long double, and vector types. So let's jump to the conclusion. So here I presented the framework ABI extractor. It is able to extract ABI properties for a compiler and dumps the information in a human readable format. It simplifies comparison between extracted ABIs from different compilers, and it helps with the validation that the ABI implementation of a compiler is correct. Now, where can you find the ABI extractor? So the ABI extractor